And for those of you who are listening online, you missed the beginning, but it was no big deal. You can look at the PowerPoint that I will have uploaded, and you will be able to access and see what I talked about. But now we're getting to the heart of it. So go ahead, Mary. This is how the Song of Songs starts, right at the very beginning. It's the first verse, really, after the Song of Songs, which is Solomon. It says, "Oh, that you would kiss me with the kisses of your mouth, for your love is better than wine." It starts very boldly. And today when I was reading it over again, it reminded me of Mary at the tomb. She's just so kind of crazy with love. She can't find Jesus' body, and she just talks like everybody knows who she's talking about, you know. "Where have you laid him?" Like, "Who are you talking about, woman?" You know. And this kind of does the same thing. It just comes right out there out of this ardent love that this bride is experiencing, this beloved is experiencing. And our prayer can be that way, or was that way at some point, where I think all of you can relate to that, just kind of this ardent desire for the Lord where you just can't get enough of him. And the important thing to know, to start out with, is that the truth is it's really all about God's desire for us, and we're just responding to that desire. Go ahead, Mary. Song of Songs, this is the bride speaking. She says, "I am my beloved's, and his desire is for me." John of the Cross says, "If the person is seeking God, much more is her beloved seeking her." It all comes from his love for us. So when we experience that kind of desire for him, it's because somewhere in our lives he's touched on something in us. We experience his love, whether it's, you know, very concrete or not, but something's going on in our spirit. But it always comes from him. One time I was praying in the Song of Songs, and I came across that verse, "Show me your face," and I felt like the Lord was saying that if each of us don't show him our face, he misses us. So he says to Mary, "Show me your face." To Kathleen, two Kathleen's here, "Show me your face." You know, to Mary Ann, "Show me your face. Because if you don't show me your face, I'm going to be missing something." That's how much his thirst is for us. God thirsts for us. St. Catherine of Siena speaks of the crucified Jesus as slain with such fire of love as seems insatiable. Yet still he thirsts, as if saying, "I have greater ardor and desire and thirst for your salvation than I am able to show you, even with my passion." Catherine could only describe the God she encountered as crazed with love, drunk with love. If you want a good book to read, I have lots of books here I'm going to recommend tonight about God's love for us and his thirst for us. I'd recommend Mother Teresa's Secret Fire by Father John Langford. And I'll just read you a little appetizer. "As the burning desert yearns for water, so God yearns for your love. As a thirsty man longs for water, so God longs for each of us. As a thirsty man seeks after water, so God seeks after us. As a thirsty man thinks only of water, so God thinks constantly of us." It's just a little teaser to much more in this book about God's thirst for us and how much he can't live without us, really. So I'll leave these books up here. You can look at them later. So we have this God who is seeking after us, desiring this relationship with us, pursuing us. And he comes to us. He stands behind our wall because he doesn't intrude upon us. He gazes in at the windows of our soul. I hope you can see him in that picture. Look for him carefully. "Looking through the lattice, my beloved speaks and says to me, 'Arise, my love, my fair one, and come away.'" Come. He woos us in our souls. So the bride responds, and we respond. "Upon my bed at night, I sought him whom my soul loves. I sought him, but found him not. I called him, but he gave no answer." You ever had a prayer time like that? She seeks, she calls. I love the way that this phrase comes up a number of times. I sought him whom my soul loves. She repeats that a number of times in the Song of Songs. I looked for him whom my soul loves, but I found him not. He gave no answer. St. John of the Cross describes this as, in Spiritual Canticle, he says, "Where have you hidden, beloved, and left me moaning? You fled like a stag after wounding me. I went out calling you when you were gone." That longing in our hearts to reciprocate with the Lord's love. So, this bride makes a good decision. She decides she's going to go look for him. She actively seeks him in prayer. She's not giving up, you know. "I'll rise now and go about the city, in the streets and in the squares. I will seek him whom my soul loves. I sought him but found him not." Once again, "The watchmen found me as they went about in the city." So she asked them, just like Mary in the garden, "Have you seen him whom my soul loves?" And Jesus lets himself be found. "Scarcely had I passed them when I found him whom my soul loves. I held him and would not let him go." God wants to increase our desire, and that's part of the way of how he increases our desire is by playing this little game of hide and seek with us, which I'll say a little bit more later, but so that we will seek after him and take steps to have our lives be more ready for him in our lives. Now, I want to say something here before I go on, which is God works with every soul individually. And each one is unique. I was trying to, there's some place in John of the Cross, but I couldn't find it today. I looked at the index under everything I could think of. I would rewrite the index to his works if I have kind of in the back, but I couldn't find this. But the point I want to make is, so the way he works in prayer with each of us is going to be very unique. So the way he works with me in prayer is going to be different than the way that he works with you in prayer. The end result is the same, union with him. But if you read the spiritual masters, they will usually slip that in somewhere, no matter how organized their, steps along the way. This happens and then this happens. They'll usually say, but God works in his own way. So it's really all about relationship. And anybody who's been in a relationship with anyone, they know that you tell your stories, they're so different from each other's. And God is that way with us too, as he woos us. Okay. So I'm going to look at another passage in the Song of Songs. And this one starts out kind of similar. "I slept, but my heart was awake. Hark, my beloved is knocking." So he's not looking through the window, he's knocking at the door, but it's the same thing, you know. "Open to me, my sister, my love, my dove, my perfect one, for my head is wet with dew, my locks with the drops of the night." So once again, he's coming to her. "I want more. Come." But this time, she has a little bit different response. She says, she kind of hesitates a little bit. "I had put off my garment. How could I put it on? I'd bathed my feet, but how could I soil them?" You know, we do that in prayer sometimes too. God's saying, come, come away. And we're like, but I got to do this first. Or, you know, I'm such a sinner. Or whatever, we put out these little excuses and we just kind of hesitate instead of just responding to him. So she says, "My beloved put his hand to the latch and my heart was thrilled with me." So now she has to make a decision. She's got two things going on in her. How can I put this garment back on? But he's there and it's thrilling my heart. So what am I going to do? So it's a time of decision. And John of the Cross says, this is important, "There are many who desire to advance and persistently beseech God to bring them to this state of perfection. Yet when God wills to conduct them through the initial trials and mortifications as is necessary, they are unwilling to suffer them and they shun them, flee from the narrow road of life. They hardly even begin to walk along this road by submitting to what is least, that is, to ordinary sufferings." So whatever little suffering she had to do to put her garment on, she has to decide, what is she going to do? And thank God she decides to pursue him. So the song, the story goes on. I arose to open to my beloved, and my hands dripped with myrrh, my fingers with liquid myrrh upon the handles of the boat. I opened to my beloved, and of course, he had turned and gone. We know why, though. My soul failed me when he spoke. I sought him, but found him not. I called him, but he gave no answer. And this time, it's not only is he not there, but it gets a little worse, if you know this story. The watchmen found me as they went about in the city. They beat me this time. They wounded me. They took away my mantle, those watchmen of the walls. Not an easy time. And I'm going to leave you hanging a little bit for what happens and go now and just talk a little bit about our experience of prayer. Prayer becomes dry and dark. Where is my beloved? This is what's going on with the bride here. I love Teresa of Avila. She's so frank, you know. This is from a book called Cantata of Love. Teresa of Avila does not fail to complain that this too is unjust, that she already has much to do, and by the same token, not enough time to devote to contemplative prayer. At least God should be there at those moments. But on the contrary, he hides himself and remains silent. That is more than she can stand. So she says, well then, God, is it not enough for you to let me stay in this miserable life that I bear for the love of you, accepting to live here where everything prevents me from enjoying you, where I have to drink and sleep and negotiate and deal with the world, as well as bear everything for the love of you? You well know, my Lord, what a tremendous torment this is for me. Must you also hide yourself in the rare moments that are left for me to enjoy you? How can your mercy tolerate this? How can your love for me accept this? I believe, Lord, that if it were possible for me to hide myself from you as you hide yourself from me, I think that your love for me would not tolerate it. You are with me and you always see me. This is unbearable, my Lord. I beg you to consider that you are hurting one who loves you so much. That's a woman with chutzpah, that's for sure. Now, that's not usually how I would think. How I would think is this way. What am I doing wrong? Or has God abandoned me? All of a sudden, I'm very aware of my smallness and my sinfulness. My prayer is full of distractions. I'm sure no one can relate to that. And I'll say more about that later. But at the same time, something's going on in me where my desire for him is increasing in the midst of all that. Even though all those things are going on in me, the dryness, the darkness, worries about what I'm doing wrong, all of that. So what's going on? Well, first of all, let's assume that you're not living in serious sin or seriously ill, because those two states can cause dryness as well. A great book, I have so many great books up here. Anyway, if you haven't read this one, it's a book called Impact of God by Ian Matthew, and he talks about John of the Cross in a way that you can understand. And it's not like a commentary on John of the Cross, it's an explanation of what John's trying to say in layman language, which might make you want to go read him. But one of the things that he says is, it's not God's absence, but the way he is present that may cause us difficulty. So God's present in a different way than we're used to. And part of what he's doing is purifying us and removing the obstacles that are keeping us from perceiving who he is. Another way that Ian Matthew describes it is that God is making a space for us in himself. You know, we hit a point in prayer where however hard we try, whatever we do, whatever prayers we pray, whatever, prayer just doesn't seem to be moving along as we would like it to be. Kind of like hitting a wall, okay? So what happens when we experience the dryness and the aridity is God is doing for us what we cannot do for ourselves. It's almost like you get put under anesthesia and he is working. And what you experience is this dryness, and where is he? Ian Matthew says, he is a God who is pressing in to give himself. So he's making the space in us that we can't make in ourselves. And a beautiful thing is where God finds space, he enters. It's sort of like sunshine. You can't keep it out of places. You know, if there's a little crack under the door, the sunshine goes under. So as God makes the space, he just, bam, comes right in there. But this really is something we can't do for ourselves. Like I said, he does it by means of dryness and night, and that is how he makes space for the gift of himself. And part of what is going on, too, is him purifying us of false images we make of him. I do this all the time. I think we all do it, because there's something in us that wants to control God. We want to have our, you know, we want to have him. So we get our ideas of who he is, our conceptions, and then he has to break us free of that, because he's so far beyond that. He's incomprehensible. He can never be fully comprehended. John of the Cross says, everything the intellect can understand, the will enjoy, and the imagination picture is most unlike and disproportioned to God. The way that Augustine says it is something like, think of everything you could about God, his glory, his majesty, his, you know, his love, and then throw it out the window because it's not even near who he is. So God's so far beyond us. In The Cloud of Unknowing, which is a book on prayer, a man may know completely and ponder thoroughly every created thing and its works, yes, and God's work too, but not God himself. Thought cannot comprehend God. And like I said, we can so easily make him in our image. I remember, you know, part of the time when I was going through this and God was breaking me free, you know, and maybe you guys, some of you have this thought, but all of a sudden you're like, I don't know who you are. Who are you? Do you exist? Because he was just pulling out the rug from underneath me, you know, of what I had held on to as my ideas of who he was. And it can be quite shocking, but if you give him the chance and you keep going on and believing, he'll bring you through that to the place where, well, I'll get to that, but to the faith in who he is. But I must have had a lot of those kind of ideas about him, because I needed to get broken of them. So really what he's doing is giving us a new way of seeing him and perceiving him. John of the Cross talks in one of his books, I think it's A Dark Night, let's see, about Ascent of Mount Carmel. He says, kind of what it's like, he said, if we were informed that on a certain island there was an animal whose like or kind we had never seen, we would then have no more idea or image of that animal in our mind than previously, no matter how much we are told. And then he goes on about how you try to describe to a blind person what color is. You know, there's just this, so much about God that it's just beyond our intellect to grasp him. And so what he has to do is strip us, take us into the desert, strip us of all that is not of him, so that we can live in pure faith, pure hope, and pure love in the theological virtues. That's what he's all about doing. So, so in Hosea, we have the bride, the groom, the husband saying, the Lord saying, therefore, behold, I will allure her and bring her into the wilderness and speak tenderly to her heart. And in that day, says the Lord, you will call me my husband, and no longer will you call me by Baal. For I will remove the names of the Baals from her mouth, and they shall be mentioned no more, and I will betroth you to me forever. I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, and you shall know the Lord. God wants us all for himself. This is my latest favorite book. It's called Contemplative Provocations by Father Donald Haggerty. It's through Ignatius Press. I'm only on page 59, but I already have lots of little orange. I ran out of them, but this is his comment on having our own ideas of God. Clearly then, the idea we have of God can make prayer difficult, if not impossible. We block our way to God by every wrong notion of God. That can happen if we dwell too much on God's transcendent mystery, if we look upon him as a distant and remote, as a God without eyes. A God unavailable to our pleading is a distortion of God. Yet this can be a temptation sometimes, to conceive his hiddenness as an absence. The point he's trying to make here is, even though God is incomprehensible, he's still very personal. And we don't want to let go of that. He's not just this abstract being out there. He's a God in a personal relationship with us. And of course, we can see him in Jesus, but even in Jesus, you can't comprehend him fully because he's not just human, he's also divine. Neglecting his personal presence, we may tend ourselves to become impersonal with God. Approaching him too much as unknown, we may think that we have become unknown to him, that he has forgotten us. The private thought of God's absence is simply mistaken and must be countered. Otherwise, prayer will suffer, even collapse. The mystery of God may be beyond understanding, but it is certain that he listens to us in silence. It is the only way we can pray, trusting that he waits on our every sincere word released from our heart. So it's this whole new way of relating to him. He's not just your buddy in prayer. He's God omnipotent, but he's closer to you than your own self is. I'm not going to try and elaborate much more on that. So let's go back to the bride and see what happens, what her decision was. She decided to keep going. And she runs into this group of women and she says to them, after she's been beaten, she says, I adjure you, O daughters of Jerusalem, if you find my beloved, that you tell him I'm sick with love. And the women who are following her say, well, who is this guy, basically? I mean, what is your beloved more than any other beloved, O fairest among women? What is your beloved more than any other beloved that you thus adjure us? And she has an amazing response. Think about what she's just gone through. She got up. She went to the door. He wasn't there. She goes running after him. The watchman beat him up. Now, my response might be, I don't know what he is. You know, but I love the way it comes out of her. Somewhere deep inside her, she comes up with this. My beloved is all radiant and ruddy, distinguished among 10,000s. He is, his head is the finest gold. His locks are waving. She just goes on and on and on and on, and I left out some of it. His speech is most sweet, and he's altogether desirable. This is my beloved, and this is my friend, O daughters of Jerusalem. So somewhere, she's knowing him in a new way, that can come up out of her. Any of you have heard Ed Conlon's songs? Ed wrote most of those songs when he was in desert. I remember a conversation I had with him, and he said, is consolation a word in the dictionary? Because it was so out of his experience. But this is coming up out of him, you know, all of those songs, coming out of this dryness in this desert, because God was doing something deep in his soul. And that's what he's doing in each of ours as well. Okay, I thought I'd put something in here about what do we do when we pray that? What happens when you're in that spot of dryness, darkness, you know? And it's really a different kind of doing. So I'm going to just give you a bunch of bullet points here. First one is probably the hardest. Stay in the pain. Don't run away from it. Father Ian, as well as the book, he also has an article which I'll put up on the website. It's called The Seasons of Prayer. Some of you might have read it because I know it was passed out at a women's retreat a long time ago. But he says, go to that place of need because that is the threshold at which God stands. Our need is an evidence of God. And later on he says, let your need be your prayer. This then is a way of prayer, to feel our way to the wound that is in us, to the place of our need. Go there, take it, name it, hold it before Christ. That is very hard to do. It's a very hard thing to do. And Ruth Burroughs, whose sister Anne's new favorite, has a great, some great comments on this. Let's see. beauty here. Just have to find it on this page. 345. Page 345. Okay. The orientation we must make consists fundamentally in a total acceptance of the bitter experience of our poverty and an obstinate refusal to evade it. The orientation we must make consists fundamentally in a total acceptance of the bitter experience of our poverty and an obstinate refusal to evade it. Doesn't that sound like a nice place, comfy place to be in? To accept, to stand in very deed, not just in pious imagination, stripped before the living God, our leprosy laid bare, crippled in limb, blind, deaf, dumb, a living need. But I think you've all experienced that. You just don't like staying in there and knowing, you know, I think it's such a consolation to know that that's where God meets us, is there. And I thought I had another one here. There will be a great temptation to abandon or curtail prayer or to give the mind something to occupy it. Oh, I'll just read this. There would be no harm in giving it something to quieten it, a vocal prayer perhaps, provided we give this no attention. Our energy must be concentrated on surrendering to God just as we are, bearing the weight of helplessness and poverty. It is intention, not attention, that is important. It is intention, not attention, that is important. Intention is within our power. Attention is not. So we might not be able to attend to the Lord, but we can give him the intent. Okay, that's probably the hardest one, but it's a very, very important one to stay there in it. Second bullet point, don't give up, be faithful. That's hard to do too, but keep just being faithful. Adoration and prostration. So this is, God, you are who you are, and I am who I am, and I just prostrate myself before you. I had to throw in a little Therese because she's really my favorite. So offer him what you have. And I love this quote. If I felt I had nothing to offer to Jesus, I would offer him that nothing. And I have done that. I've been in prayer and said, here's my nothing. I don't have anything else to give you. I give you my nothing. I think another thing that can be helpful too are small prayers. And these two are very powerful. Be it done unto me according to your word. I was talking to my spiritual director one time and he said, what you're doing there when you say that is giving God permission. You're not doing anything. You're just saying, be it done unto me. You're just giving him that permission, as Mary did. You know, she didn't do anything to create Jesus in her womb. It was because she gave God permission. It's a very active prayer of receptivity. And then draw me comes straight from the Song of Songs, where you're feeling all those hesitancies in you. I can't do this. You say, Lord, draw me. Lord, you draw me. Draw me by yourself and your goodness and who you are. Even if I can't see you, draw me. Praying the Psalms can be a wonderful thing to do during times of dryness, because 10 to 1, you'll find something that will hit you, but will also lead you out of the mire. For instance, Psalm 63, O God, thou art my God, I seek thee, my soul thirsts for thee, my flesh faints for thee, in a dry and weary land where no water is. So I have looked upon thee in the sanctuary. So I will bless thee as long as I live. Amy Carmichael points out those little words are really important, those so's and those buts. You know, you'll go through, oh Lord, I am blah, 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 blah. But I know that you are God. But you will lift me out of the mire. So read long enough to get to the buts at least, you know. Making acts of faith, hope, and love. And, you know, a big secret I found out was when you will to love, it is love, even though you're not feeling it. When you will to believe, it is belief, even though you're not feeling it. When you will to hope. So that's what an act is. You're saying, okay, I believe you. Everything in me is saying, I don't get it, I don't understand, but I decide to believe you. Lord, I love you today, even though I don't feel like it. But that is an act of faith. Okay, just have a few more here. Thank him for everything. Everything that happens. Elizabeth of the Trinity, somewhere I stuck her card. I had this up above my desk for a long time. She said, everything that happens for me is a message of the excessive love of God for my soul. I might have read this here before, but I'll read it again. Everything that happens for me is a message of the excessive love of God for my soul. So your dry prayer time is a message of the excessive love of God for your soul. Because God loves you. He's not going to do anything to harm you. He's not going to do anything to, you know, make you farther away from him. So whatever he's allowing in your prayer time is only to draw you closer to himself. It's not for any other purpose. You might think other ways might help you to draw closer to him, but he knows what he's doing. A passage that really helped me in one of these times was in the gospel story where John the Baptist is in prison, and he sends some of his buddies over to Jesus and says, are you the one? Now, you would think of anybody John the Baptist would know, but obviously he's having some kind of doubts there, you know? And how does Jesus respond? You would expect Jesus, okay, I'll go talk to him. I'll go to prison. He doesn't do that. He just says, tell John this, you know, and then the last line was what really got me. Blessed is he who takes no offense at me. That went right to my heart. I can find offense with the Lord and how he's dealing with me. John could easily have found offense with the Lord. You know, why aren't you coming to see me? Why aren't you getting me out of this mess? Why don't you come and reassure me? But that's not what Jesus decided to do. And it wasn't because he didn't love John. We know that it really upset him when he heard of John's death. He had to go away out into the lake and get away because it really hit him. He knew what he was doing with John. Blessed is he who takes no offense at me. So that's another one I've had up above my desk to try to train myself when those things are going on to not be offended at what he's doing. And another great book, if you haven't read it, is 1,000 Gifts. This is very good for helping you to give thanks in all circumstances. I used to shy away from these books because they were usually written by people like one of our sisters who wakes up in the morning and she's all like this and she goes to bed that way too, you know? And that's not my temperament. And she can be thankful about anything, you know? Well, Anne Voskamp, who wrote this, came out of a really rough life. And she's not a natural optimist. So that gave me a lot of hope that, and she's, you'd almost think she was Catholic, you know, but anyway. But she's, it's just, I won't say any more about it. You can look at it. Anne Voskamp, 1,000 Gifts. I don't know. I think she's Free Church. But we all share, you know, and all those things. Okay, two more here. Love him in the darkness. But I thought I had a quote somewhere. Oh, I don't know where it went. Anyway, Therese says somewhere that we only have this life in which to live in faith. Because when we get to heaven, we'll see him face to face. So this is a way we can love him here, is by loving him even though it's dark. Somewhere in here I was going to read this little story about hide and seek. So I'm going to read it now because I missed it. And it's a good little story. Where is it? Well, on that, I guess I'll forget. Oh yeah, here it is. Jesus surely had a favorite game as a child, the game of hide and seek. Every child is familiar with this game and every adult remembers it. Even as a grown man, however, Jesus never ceased to play this game in a most serious manner. He continues to do so as the incarnate Son who hides and must be sought. We must seek him always in his hiding. In one sense, all of spiritual life, all the deeper riches and poverty of a contemplative life depends on persevering in this holy game. And this gentleman goes on to quote John 7:10. Then he also went, not publicly, but as it were, in secret. So even in his public ministry, he was running around hiding from people. But so we're in good company. Okay, the last thing I wanted to say here was what to do with distractions. And Teresa Avila, again, was very descriptive. She talked about how her thoughts were like wild horses that she couldn't bring into rein. But the thing I would say is the best advice I ever heard was a little story about being a... Sister Sarah, could you stand up for a minute? So you're in conversation with someone, you know, deeply talking, and all the nieces and nephews start running around you, butting in, pulling on your, you know, your arms and everything, and you just say, not now, and go back to the conversation. No, not now. Back to the conversation. Francis de Sales would say, just bring your mind gently back to the Lord. Don't beat yourself up. If God's doing something on a really deeper level, it just makes sense that your mind's going to be in other places because your mind is not engaged with the Lord in the same way. So don't get worried about it. It doesn't mean you have bad prayer. If you just give in to them and say, forget it, okay, I've had it, you probably, you know, want to do something other than that. But just give him that time. Just say, not now. And just, you know, sometimes I do this hundreds of times during a prayer time. I'm like, oh yeah, I really love you. And then, I'm off here, you know. Oh Lord, but I do love you, you know. Somebody once asked John Henry Newman, it was something like, how much good prayer did you have? It was how much prayer, I can't remember, something like that. And he said, I had about a minute. It took me, you know, 59 minutes to get there to it. So we're all in good company in this way. Okay, I'm almost done. Cloud of Unknowing has a great piece of advice here about what to do when we're our minds are other places. And so I prefer to abandon all I know, choosing rather to love him whom I cannot know. Though we cannot know him, we can love him. By love he may be touched and embraced, never by thought. Of course, we do well at times to ponder God's majesty or his kindness for the insight these meditations may bring. But the real contemplative work, you must set all this aside and cover it over with a cloud of forgetting. Then let your loving desire, gracious and devout, step bravely and joyfully beyond it and reach out to pierce the darkness above. Yes, and this is the heart of it. This is a good way to prayer. Beat upon that thick cloud of unknowing with the dart of your loving desire and do not cease, come what may. So that's a lot of what we're doing in prayer. It's like, I love you. And then you're off here. I love you, and you're off somewhere else, but that's how we beat upon that. One of the things I learned is that, is you have to learn a whole new way of navigating. I mean, sometimes I would feel like I'm like in a desert sandstorm, and once in a while I would bump into somebody like Ed Conlon, who was out there too, but most of the time, you know, I didn't, or another friend of mine. But most of the time I'm like, whoa. So it's like there's a whole new compass. And I discovered that what the compass is that desire in us. We just follow that desire. That's the compass. God is doing something beautiful in your soul. I had to put these pictures up because you can't see these with the naked eye. This is a deep, deep space and there's beauty out there. But we can't see it. And that's what's happening in our souls. Okay, I have four more slides. Some helpful attitudes. Fight the enemy by surrendering to God and what he's doing. So pray that prayer again. May it be done unto me. Don't pay attention to him. It's too hard to try to figure out what's the enemy, what's God, what's, you know, the best way to do it is just to surrender to him, to the Lord, and let him do the fighting for you. This I've already said, give thanks in all things. Mother Teresa's great phrase, take what he gives and give what he takes with a smile. Don't give up. Look for fellow travelers in the desert and learn to live with longing and thirst, because we never will be satisfied in this life, and it only gets worse. The longing and the thirst only will increase. So we have to learn how to live with it. That's our preparation. That's what's bringing us home and drawing us home. You know, and this all, I realized how much this all fits in with the Year of Faith. Another great book, The Gift of Faith, great book to read this year. Father Deitcher says in it that faith does not remove darkness. It does just the opposite. It requires it. Because belief, real faith, comes from a decision of the will, just like real hope and real love. It doesn't come out of feelings. We only, you know, it's important for us to believe in the tenets of the faith, of course, but if you take any one of them, you don't really understand them. I believe in God the Father Almighty. I mean, do you really understand what that means? We know about this much of it. We have to believe that it's much bigger than that. So we need both parts. Blessed Elizabeth of the Trinity, in one of her letters, said, faith is the face-to-face in the darkness. And a lot of times I think about that. God's there in the darkness. I know he's there. You know, if I reached out, I probably could almost touch him, you know, but I can't. But he's there. Oh, and this is the one by Therese that I... It's so sweet to serve the good God in the dark night of trial. We have this life only in which to live by faith. So if you're experiencing dryness and darkness during this year, it's great. It's a great opportunity. You're in a great place to be able to love him. And the wonderful thing is the outcome of all this, which is at the end of Song of Songs, is who is that coming up from the wilderness, leaning upon her beloved? That's what God's about. You're going to be leaning on him when you come out of the wilderness. He's drawing you here, not there. He's drawing you to himself, not pushing you away. Okay, and the last was just a list of the books that I had, and you can feel very free to come up here and look at any of them afterwards if you want to, except my journal. Well, you could look at it. It's mostly just quotes all the way through, but I think I'll leave that there for you. Okay, that's what I have to offer, and we could take a few minutes for questions or that maybe I could answer, and or sharings or whatever. If you don't have any, that's fine. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I couldn't help but think, you don't look like you're in darkness. That's good. Thank you so much.
Looks can be deceiving.
You know, I was thinking,